bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Mac is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the weekly show on Macintosh from the Bagel Tech Network, in which we've actually got some news this week. Huzzah. We're all shell-shocked a little bit, it has to be said. So shell-shocked that Tom Merritt, who's supposed to be here, bottom left, has not shown up yet. I don't know why. There's obviously a good reason for it, though, because he's not one of those guys that lets people down easily, I don't think. Top left, the panel here will give more than enough chat, though. Don McAllister, how you doing, roaming Don?
Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah, nice to be back.
Back from holidays.
Back from Macworld and back from holidays, so yeah.
How was holiday?
Holiday was fine. Just take me a little bit longer to get back into the time zone thing. I'm normally quite quick with the jet lag, but it's really hit me this time round. So not quite there yet, but we're nearly there.
Good man. Okay. Show's out this week as well?
Yeah. Did one on, iBook author, part one, and also on 1Password for iOS.
Sorry,
they just went out about 2 hours ago.
And if you want to be a member, you can watch those shows.
Indeed.
Good man. Next to him, Andy Anatko, joining us bright and early from Boston.
Hello. Well, Donna, that must be kind of a shock for you because it's bad. You're going from Hawaii to Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's like it was kind of a jar for me when I went from Hawaii myself to New England in the wintertime. Are you just like in a big room with like every single light turned on and just trying to maintain that lovely shade of like non-white that you've managed to acquire?
Didn't quite pick up much of a time. It's the time. It's 10 hours time difference. I've never been to a time zone that far apart, but yeah. No, we're getting there. I was going to say I still have a pinkish tan, but that's all gone now.
They reckon it's a day an hour, don't they? Proper recovery is a day an hour. Yeah, even if you go somewhere like Greece, that's only 2 hours. You can still have a little bit of kind of perkiness disappears for a couple of days. But yeah. Andy, how are you, mate? Andy Anatko.
Me? Oh, sorry. I am fine. I'm excellent.
Sorry, I just thought I'd ask you how you were earlier.
No. It was a rather long work day yesterday. But after a good applications of raw meat cooked to barely safe perfection with a side of something alcoholic, I was right as rain, or at least able to get out of bed in time for the show.
Don't you just wish Apple would give you some warning?
Sometimes that would be handy.
A bit of match fitness.
or at least they should do it sort of like the way they do on the Iron Chef show. Where they don't tell you beforehand exactly what you're supposed to work, what you're going to have to prepare, but they know that this could be one of these 10 ingredients are what you're going to need to work with when you come to Kitchen Stadium. Yeah. So if they simply tell all of us journalists like 10 days in advance, you will be expected to learn and write about either new Apple TV, a wristwatch that's also a television set, a camera that can also be used as a kind of running shoe. And at least, it gives us a couple of days to get our heads in the game, or at least to not like arrange for, not to plan for like a fancy dinner with somebody and to donate. See, this is what really gets me. Yesterday afternoon, I was supposed to be donating platelets at the Red Cross. So don't apologize to me, Apple. Apologize to the premature babies and the cancer patients who will not be receiving white blood cells and plasma and blood components from me that I was supposed to donate yesterday.
See, that's a heavy price to pay, isn't it? That's I'd never looked at it that way before. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm a commentator. I'm here to make people see things that the ordinary layperson is invisible to.
Lord Bagel on Twitter has said, "What a great Mac show! We've got Inatco whistling, McAllister as mini me, Doctor Happy Mac looks like he's hungover, and Chris Forsman is stoned. Clearly, Chris Forsman, please. Stone Boy, how you doing?
Please, Lord Bagel, send me some.
Any drugs?
Yeah, I'm not stoned."
Have you had a good week writing about Mac?
It's been busy.
We expect you to give us all that information because it's superb. And Dr. Happy Hangover.
Yeah, I haven't even started yet. This is my bright and chipper look.
You're bright and chipper, mate. cool,
yeah.
Bennett.
God bless you, Mary Poppins.
Don't, mate, don't get near that razor. Good week, pal.
Yeah, not too bad. Busy, busy. Excitement, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Go out in the morning, fix your Macs, come back, and they've dropped a whole new operating system on your head.
It is. It does seem to be rather sudden. And Tom Merritt, how are you doing?
I think some people on Twitter thought I might.
There we go. The week in Apple, there's been some news. We've got some Thunderbolt stuff from the sea that they reckon turns your MacBook Pro into a Mac Pro, which is be good because a bit more storage would be nice. We've also got people looking for a length of rope to tie around Tim Cook's neck if they don't get any kind of any kind of rebate or divvy on their shares with Apple. And lo and behold, the OS bomb dropped yesterday, and we've got. That's a good one, yeah. OS 10, iOS 10, some people are slurring, Mountain Lion. So I guess we'll start with Mountain Lion, no?
Yeah, we'll be on it all day.
I mean, before we even get into the features and that kind of stuff of it, is this kind of very un-Apple? Talking about something before it's really wholly available, releasing a public beta on messages and things like that, no?
No, I mean, there's public betas for FaceTime. There's a ginormous public beta for Siri.
Okay.
It's not unprecedented. I think it is a little surprising that they took the tack of not having, a media event that they have done in the past. When they showed off, Lion for the first time and Snow Leopard for the first time, they had these events and they had slideshows and everything. And this time they basically got a select number of journalists, got kind of their own one-on-one presentation.
That's different.
Yeah. And I think someone, I can't remember where I read this, so I apologize that I'm not giving you proper credit, but I read somewhere someone said something to the effect of, you know, they're saving those bigger media events where the journalists are going to all fly into San Francisco and see a big presentation, because they just had one for the iBooks thing, and then there's probably going to be one for the iPad here soon in the beginning of March-ish.
Allegedly.
That's been the pattern so far. Two releases don't make the best pattern to follow, but it seems ever more likely that it's going to be here in early March. So I think maybe they wanted to get this out to developers to get them working on their software and updating, using the new APIs, using code signing for the new gatekeeper feature, that kind of thing. But if they just dropped it on developers, then Apple doesn't have any control over the message. And as we all know, Apple loves to control the message. So I guess this was sort of their compromise that they can get these journalists and give them access. Then they have some kind of control over the message when it comes out, instead of developers start downloading it and then just start tweeting and writing about it.
Andy, were you one of the selected few?
Alas, I was not. Unfortunately,
how Boston. How dare they?
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can't. You don't. It's the part of my responsibilities yesterday were responding to tweets and emails and basically cut and pasting the theme response, which is, this is not an entitlement. Just because you are a journalist, just because you are a journalist that more than 8 people have heard of, does not mean that you're entitled to get advance word on things. I have been given advance notice about some stuff. I have not been given advance notice on other stuff. And if I try to work out why I was picked for this but not that, this time but not that other time, it's like, just do your job, Andy. Come on.
Yeah, no. I mean, but I've got to say, mate, I'm disgusted on your behalf.
So you're playing right into my hands. If I maintain the high ground, not only do I have other people being outraged on my behalf, but also I look like a damn saint.
You are.
This is wonderful. I couldn't play this better.
You are. Do you have a miracle that we can send forward to the Vatican to get you canonized? Is canonized a word?
That's it. That's okay, because you know what? I've got the next edition of the BlackBerry Playbook. Okay?
Oh, does it do email? Does it do email?
Well, I'm not allowed to show you the front of it. That's
you're kidding.
Give you. Okay, so suck on that. That's all I'm saying.
You can't show. You've got an embargo on the front only.
I'm joking. This is a regular playbook.
You had me, man.
Nice burn.
Oh, I thought we had an exclusive there.
You lost me at BlackBerry. Yeah.
BlackBerry lost BlackBerry at BlackBerry.
What you were saying earlier is exactly right. Apple, when they're taking control of so many of their events, they want to stage manage absolutely everything. That causes a problem when you realize that, gosh, if we're gonna make everybody haul their butts out here for an event for the iPad, and then likely for another consumer event in the next month and a half, and then there's WWDC. Not only does that kind of put a strain on external resources, but also puts a strain on Apple resources. It's kind of hard enough for them to train up an executive with the right slide pack it's not mountain lion still is not tripping lightly off the tongue yet. But everyone I've talked to who have actually sat through this briefing, it wasn't what you'd expect it to be, which is just
that neighbor. I've got no idea who that is because it's not showing up on your channel. I think that's Tom Merritt, but
it's Skype Dance Party.
Oh God, we're slick.
The Sky Party.
I can't. I don't know what to do. I'm just.
Come on, let's have a clap line, everybody.
Oh man. Oh dear, dear, dear. I can't even switch it off because I can't see the screen.
Stupid Skype. Shut up, Skype. You're ruining this podcast thing.
Oh, no.
As usual.
I'd love to blame Skype, but it's not. It's not. Who the hell's that? I can't even find out who's dialing and where. I can't hang it up. Oh my life.
Hey.
Yay. Right. Oh, Jesus.
I'm just not going to enjoy that.
Oh man. Were you saying something sensible?
What are the odds of that ever happening?
But basically,
yeah, it seems as though this is going to be sort of a loaded year for Apple presentations. So, even if they just put like 50 people into town hall and give a quick demo of something, that requires such much of a time suck at Apple with so many top level people that if there's a way that they can sort of avoid doing that, if they don't feel it's absolutely necessary, then that's what they'll do. But this is probably the earliest that Apple has ever shown off a new release of the OS. There's precedent last year with Snow Leopard. But remember that they didn't actually distribute code to developers until much later. They were just showing off actual features and trying to get mostly trying to get educators interested in the future upgrade and future hardware. With this one, God, if developers weren't already like shoulder deep in the muck trying to get their app sandboxed before the March 1 deadline, now they got to deal with a brand new open save dialog box. And just that alone, I'm getting so many emails and IMs from developers asking, who assume that I've had this for a couple of weeks now, saying, could you try our app under Mountain Lion? Does it break? Because the level of despair and disappointment among developers, I don't think has been this low in 6 or 7 years. And I'm really interested to see what the fallout's going to be by the time August or September rolls around. I am hearing from a lot of longtime developers who are not disgusted. They're not taking a stand. They're simply saying, I wrote this really wonderful app 8 years ago. I feel as though it's had a good run. At this point, the only way that I could make it work with the App Store is to rewrite it from top to bottom. And I don't feel like writing this app again from top to bottom. And also this gatekeeper thing is also kind of another kick in the pants for other developers because it uses a signing technique that breaks, that might break apps that use self-modifying code. There are a couple of apps I know of, for instance, that use compiled Apple scripts to do scheduling or modify its own behavior for subsequent launches. And because it's essentially modifying itself, Gatekeeper will say, oh, well, this app has been tampered with. I will not allow you to launch it anymore. So if Apple is trying to put, I believe Gatekeeper is a really good move and a really generous move from Apple, but a side effect will be that there might be an unwanted stigma attached to any app that does not decide to have its app signed, even the ones that have to spread the message, look, we do things in a way that that signing absolutely does not work with, and we can't rewrite our entire app. We're a $20 piece of shareware, so this is the end of the line for us. So it's a complicated issue.
That's kind of sad. The man with the ruddy face, obviously frustrated, and the up the nose shot is Tom Merritt. Hello, mate.
Hello.
Oh, man, you had a hard time.
Yeah.
A hard drive time.
I got my hands on the command and the R buttons right now.
So hard drive failure, I gather.
Well, yeah, file system failure. I think the hard drive's probably okay, but this isn't the first time I've run into problems with the HFS Plus just getting corrupted and causing my life to fall apart for a day.
Bad luck, mate. I'm so sorry to hear that. But thank you so much for boosting the air at the last minute and getting yourself in here. Very appreciated.
Oh, yeah. I just grabbed my wife's MacBook Air and plugged it into the USB mic, and that finally worked. My desktop machine wasn't working with the mixer either.
Oh, God. Well, welcome. We're talking about Mountain Lion, obviously. I don't think there's anything else worth talking about. And we're just discussing the departure of Apple from the kind of super secrecy right up to the keynote and why they've gone ahead and kind of boosted stuff out in large public beta. And Andy was just saying about the travel costs of people, but I think more the executive costs that you were talking about, Andy, of people learning slide packs and so on, perhaps is more in their thinking. Any first thoughts, Tom, on Mountain Lion from what you've seen or...
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical about the whole gatekeeper thing. I caught a little bit about what Andy was saying, and I agree with him that it's a good move as far as security goes, and it's a good move as sort of trying to keep everyone who develops to have a pathway in. But I think you're already seeing the shrieks of people out there saying, "Aha! This is what we expected. Apple's going to lock things down on the desktop now too, and this is just the first step. And if you don't, you know, if you don't cry against it now, you're going to be sad when they lock out all unsigned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." Yeah. I'm not sure it's that bad, and I think this kind of outcry will hopefully keep it from ever becoming that bad. But I do think it does shove some of the options for open source and experimental software a little out of the mainstream, and I think there's a legitimate concern about that.
I mean, what about the list of excluded Macs? Because one of the things that's come out is that there's Macs that aren't that old that are getting pushed out with this system. I mean, you've got Mac Mini from early 2009 or later. That's 2 years ago ish. Xserve, okay, I can live with Xserve being shoved out the door, but iMac mid-2000, okay, that's a good time back, fair enough, but there's machines from 2009 and 2008 that are more than capable probably of running the OS, but they're being shoved out with it.
I saw some analysis of this, and I tend to agree. I think it has to do because Apple said in its press release that it has a revamped graphics subsystem largely based around OpenCL, and the all the machines that are cut out have older Intel graphics adapters, integrated graphics adapters, so like the GMA 950 and the X3100. That's the equalizer there.
So The what's the reason for the exclusion then? Just purely on graphics?
Yeah. I mean that's the someone sat down and looked at all the models and looked at the differences, and that was the, you know, it wasn't 64-bit like it was with Lion. Mm. You know, it wasn't a certain processor model or speed or anything like that. The difference between the machines were effectively an OpenCL compatible graphics adapter or an older, crappier Intel one.
Yeah, okay. So that's not too bad. iMessage Messages has got a huge upgrade as well. I mean, Chris, you're saying instantly that that's going to be your cool thing today. You're obviously pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, it's a beta, and it's got some problems. No
such
question.
As?
the biggest one that I noticed is that... So, and you can do this in iChat. If you've got someone that has a Google Talk account and an AIM account and a Mobile Me account or whatever, and you can switch between them. So if you go up to their username, click on their username, you can switch and send it using different protocols. And the same is true in Messages. And it adds the iMessage protocol to it, so you can send it to their, you know, to their iCloud ID or their phone number, if they have an iPhone and they have a phone number registered, you can choose that as an option to send it to. And when you're using iMessage, it's great because it'll go, you know, if it can go to the iPhone and their Mac at the same time. If they're at, you know, if they have the iPhone put down and they're talking on the Mac, but if they get up and walk away and they've got their iPhone, they can still like continue the conversation using the phone. And it works across, you know, any device registered with the same iCloud ID. But what we noticed in testing yesterday is that if you switch from one protocol to another, messages will sometimes, and well, we got it to be pretty repeatable, but they would send messages to more than one protocol. So if we were talking over AIM, for instance, and then switched over to iMessage, and messages would go to an AIM client and to iMessage clients, or if you switch to Google Talk, you know, it starts sending messages to more than one place at a time. And it's particularly confusing because sometimes people will use different clients specifically for different protocols. You know, like I use my instant AOL Instant Messenger screen name that I've had for years and years, and I use it for everything. But my iMessage ID, I only give out to certain friends. So like if, you know, or like my editor has that. So if someone needs to get a hold of me for some reason, not during work hours or whatever, or for emergency or whatever, they know they can send me a message there and it'll go just to my iPhone and my iPad. You know, so that it makes it difficult when you're trying to manage that, where the messages go, because messages will start sending them multiple places.
Don, you've been pretty quiet, mate. Any thoughts initially on line?
On Mountain Line, yeah. I mean, the big thing for me is the iCloud integration. I mean, that was the major disappointment for me with Line and iCloud, in that it wasn't fully baked. You know, we had no documents in the cloud, so we sort of had it in iWork on the iOS devices, and that was working great. But you know, there was no way of seamlessly transferring your documents onto your PC, onto your Mac. So it looks to me that Mountain Lion is really Lion. You know, it's what should have been delivered in Lion, yeah. And they couldn't have delivered. They just couldn't manage it all in one go. So Mountain Lion is the, you know, the full stop. Right, this is the fully baked version of iCloud, and once we get it, we'll then start to see all the benefits of this seamless transferring of data between all our devices. So that's what I'm really looking forward to.
I'm not sure that I agree 100% with what you're saying, because if you remember, Steve Jobs said, you know, iCloud is going to be kind of the basis for what we do for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't think it's so much that Lion missed the mark with iCloud. I think that Lion was just a small step in this direction, that Mountain Lion is another step.
I agree, but unless you've got the full implementation across the entire, you know, all the platforms, yeah, you know, you lose the benefit of it, really. And I we will have that now.
I'm right with you. I mean, documents in the cloud was probably a feature that must have been a huge, huge decision to leave it out of Lion, because if you get documents in the cloud working, you instantly get what Lion is all about. You instantly get the reason why Lion had versioning and autosave. It's just everything is based around that. And so when you get into this new feature last year and you realize that, oh, and how do I move documents into iCloud? Well, we go into the go-to Safari and type iCloud.com, log in, use this web app. No. I'm supposed to be able to edit a document in Pages, walk away from my Mac, pick up my iPad, and have the exact same document synced to the exact same page, the exact same edit. So that's why we're going to... That's why this is such a big deal for Mountain Lion. I do think that it was such a big deal that they did have to split it up into two releases, but... I think that was a really glaring mistake from Lion.
So is phase three on this then integration? So you've got collaboration on documents potentially? Because that's still not there, is it?
Still not there. Yeah. But that's another kettle of fish. Really, there's still developers who don't really know how they're supposed to handle documents in the cloud. Because I was talking to a developer a couple months ago who was actually was giving a really good presentation at a developer summit. Talking about all the different ways he managed to absolutely destroy every working copy of a document on every platform in iCloud that had ever been synced to, just because he did something that wasn't immediately obvious. I mean, you have to be so paranoid to make sure that the user has the absolute up-to-date version of every single app that you've written, so that if you have Pages version 1 on your iPad, Pages version 1.2 on the desktop, and then Pages version 1.3 on the iPhone, it's possible that an edit that the iPhone version does will be confusing to all the other versions. The other versions will try to deal with it as best they can. They'll mung up the file, push that munged version of the file back up into iCloud, and corrupt everything. So it's not even a problem specifically with iCloud. I think that Apple is having a problem communicating clearly what developers are meant to do with all these great new features.
Yeah, you look at how slowly Google has crawled on their development of Google Docs since they acquired Writely, and they aren't even trying to allow you to have local copies anymore. I mean, the Google Docs offline is so limited. That just points out to me exactly what you're talking about, Andy. It's incredibly difficult to make this stuff work in a way that doesn't just screw everybody over at some point by doing exactly the opposite of what it's supposed to do, which is safeguard all the versions.
Is there a certain element of that, though, Tom, that the Google Docs does what it says on the tin? It's a cloud-based system. It always has been. And it actually functions, and multiple user access is slick and functional. And to a certain degree,
except on mobile,
good point.
Worthless.
But to a certain degree, you know, it ain't broke. Don't fix it.
I think that there's, I agree with the point that you're making, Ewan, about Google Docs. And again, this is where Google's trying to add an offline version so you can, even within the browser, you can edit a document. But once you go back online, the question is, okay, now how do you rectify all the changes that you've made offline with what someone else might have done online?
And you base know, that if, across multiple users, and you're really screwing the pooch.
Right. Yeah. But like Andy's saying, it's a problem even when it's just one user.
Mm.
And I've talked a lot, like, for instance, Ken Case over at Omni, and they've developed kind of their own syncing solution so that, you know, like OmniFocus and OmniPlan files and stuff can be used across desktops and multiple users can access it and things like that. And it's just a really difficult problem because there's so many edge cases, like even if you just one person has a slightly different version and one of the versions does something that the other version doesn't recognize, I mean, that can cause, you know, a conflict. And I think part of the problem is that Apple, so far, the iCloud APIs effectively give developers basically a place to put the files and some ways to push changes. And that's it. It's still up to each individual developer and each individual application to decide when to push the data, what data gets pushed, when those data changes happens, how do apps on other platforms read the data? And I think that's such a tough problem. And I think what developers would really like is for Apple to kind of come up with some kind of standardize that functionality in the APIs. And then they can learn, you know, once they know this is how it works, then they can think about, okay, how do I need to adjust my app for working within that framework? You know, this is the way Apple wants it to work. How do I make my app, you know, accept that reality? Whereas each developer now is trying to come up with, like, okay, how do I make it work for my app? I mean, I've got to think of it. You know, they basically have to reinvent the syncing process for each individual application.
I'm just thinking about the UI as well, because, I mean, you know, with iCloud, you're kind of thinking about the Google Drive-esque approach of you've got a Finder item that clearly is access to your iCloud drive, and that's not what's taking place here. They're doing the iCloud access through Pages or through Keynote or through Numbers. So you're getting access to, you know, like the little iCloud tab in the top left corner. Do you see that as a positive move, or would you want the control and the file management capability of a Finder-esque folder?
Yeah, I think what Apple are trying to do is they're trying to simplify file management. In fact, they're trying to take away file management. They don't want users really to worry about files and where they are. Basically, if you have a Pages document, when you open Pages, it's there for you with all your other Pages documents.
Well, to be fair, John, they've had a Finder application that was very good at hiding documents anyway for years.
But, you know, and for some people that would be perfect. You know, that simplified arrangement would be perfect. For techies and people who have sort of been brought up with a, you know, hierarchical folder structure and like to organize things in certain ways, that's going to be a nightmare for them. But, you know, it's I don't know. It's going to be difficult. I think it's going to be difficult. I think for new users coming into the environment, or for general users, it's probably not going to be an issue. But for sort of super users and power users, you might get, you know, a little bit of pushback on it.
But this kind of demonstrates when I like Mountain Lion. My review or my column about it just got posted this morning on the Sun Times site. I liked it, but it really does give me a creaky sensation in a couple of places. Because you notice that when they transmogrified iPad apps into macOS apps, they didn't add extra features, they didn't add extra functionality, they didn't do anything to them, really, to take advantage of the fact that you've got a keyboard, you've got a larger screen, you've got more storage, you've got all this other stuff. No, they just simply rubber stamp whatever they've got on the iPad. They didn't really do anything to enhance it for the desktop experience. And then when I look at what they've done with Documents in the Cloud, it really is optimized towards just having a few dozen documents that are organized by type. And the only way that you can organize these documents is you can do an iOS sort of thing where you just simply drag one file on top of another file, and now you've got a collection of files that you can then drill into. But it's clearly optimized for people who aren't going to be dealing with anything other than the files they were just dealing with for the past 2 or 3 days. So I'm not sure that this is cause for concern overall, but it's possible to be sufficiently wary as to wonder if Apple's not trying to dumb down the Mac OS itself and turn it from a general sort of computing operating system that can do everything. And that's how we all tend to identify a desktop operating system. It can do anything you want it to do, no matter how much of an edge case it is, to something that is designed to suit the needs of a specific kind of user that doesn't make really, really heavy demands of their desktop. That sort of attitude is perfectly appropriate for an iOS device. I mean, the iPad is 95% what I want a notebook to do. But when I get home and when I get my MacBook Pro, when I get my iMac, even when I get my 11-inch MacBook Air, I need it to do everything. And if we get to a point where there are lots of things I can't do with it because Apple could not imagine anybody having more than 10 word processing documents at once, that's when I start wondering, I really liked Windows 8 in beta form. I wonder what Windows 9 will look like.
I think I was just sick in my mouth then. Sorry, mate.
There you go. I'm the gross of Christmas future.
I've heard a lot of people making that comparison of Windows 8 Metro and Mountain Lion, because they're both, in my opinion, making the same mistake of trying to be two things at once. We're going to be a tablet OS on a desktop. Microsoft's bending over backwards to try to show where, you're not going to use this in this situation and that, and it's just confusing the hell out of everyone. I don't think Mountain Lion is that confusing, but I think it is a frightening idea to think, well, wait a minute, iPad's great because it's an iPad. And I don't mind that I don't have the file system so much. I kind of wish I had it, but you know, I've gotten used to it. But on my desktop, I'm like you. I want to have access to everything, and I don't want it to be dumbed down. I'll end up looking at something else.
And the Finder is a case in point. It really hasn't changed much in the past 5, 6, 7, actually 10 years, has it?
Yeah.
We should be at a point where I can simply say, either say or even just type, give me that Word file that I was working on last week, the one about the Panasonic camera. There's enough information in that sentence, and there's enough power in Spotlight to actually associate that with an actual file. It should be just like when you type a search into the search field of system preferences, where as you start typing password control on mobile, you actually see Spotlight's turn on and turn off, and suddenly by the time you get to the end of the sentence, there's one big light focused on this one system preference that now it knows for a fact, oh, you mean you want the trackpad preferences and not this other one. That's the sort of thing that could be happening in the Finder, but it's not happening at all. So I don't know why Apple doesn't think that there isn't room for improvement elsewhere in the macOS experience, and that the way to improve the macOS could have solutions beyond, let's take that feature from the iPad and make it into a macOS feature as well.
I mean, there's a point from Teresa in the chat room who's saying it's really hard for old school people to change the way that they've done things in the past, especially people like me. I've got OCD with my files, and I can see this making me nuts. My ability to control and manage and filter my hard drive is insane.
Here's the thing that I think this is what I see Apple doing, and it's they're not... I think Gatekeeper is another example of this. But if you look in Mountain Lion, when you go to open a file, you hit open, and you can either see your iCloud with its simplified setup, or you can see the standard, you know, Finder open dialog box.
With its even more simplified setup.
But, you know, they're sort of giving a choice here, and it's sort of like Gatekeeper. You know, the Gatekeeper has a setting where you can set it so you just, like, you can only get apps from the Mac App Store, you can only get signed apps, or you can install anything. And it, and the default isn't install anything, because that's what a power user needs. A power user needs to install anything. Andy and Natco needs to install anything. You know, you and Rankin wants to install anything, right? But not everybody does.
The undertone of that was, but I'm not a power user. Yeah, thanks, mate.
No. No, I'll be honest. I'm not even sure that I need that. No. I'm not sure. I haven't tried it out yet. Well, and you know,
dealing with hundreds of files isn't necessarily a power user feature. Yeah. No. I mean, my dream for years has always been that I ideally don't even need to deal with directory structure whatsoever. Anytime I want to find, I'm doing a presentation. I know that. Oh wait, I know I got a picture of a. I got a picture of the of Chairman Mao in Tiananmen Square that would be perfect for this slide here. I don't really care that it's in the pictures folder, inside the China folders folder, inside the Day 3 folder. I just simply go into Spotlight. Right. Spotlight finds it for me.
Well, that's what like iPhoto is doing for your photos. That's what iTunes is doing for your music. And I think that I don't think that it's like the end of the line. Like Apple's not going to improve the Finder anymore. From that aspect, but I think what we're seeing is, you know, the iPad only has one approach to files, and that's it. Yeah, you know, I think it has a flat list, and that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, what Apple is doing is they're trying to bring some of those simplified aspects, or some of those features that people do like about the iPad. I don't like thinking about the files. This way of doing it works for me, whatever. And I think that I think what Apple is targeting with that kind of stuff is like, you know, the majority, the you know, 80-90% of users, but they're still offering the rest of us the same experience we've had. And there are, and like Andy said, there is room for improvement on that end too. But I think that what we're seeing is I guess not exactly experimentation, but definitely thinking of different ways of doing it. And I think on the desktop, at least for the time being, until that one solution that works for everyone is reached, if that's even possible, we're going to see, you know, this option of, you know, we can do it the iCloud way, or we can do it the old Finder way.
Don, you're bursting. Go on.
No. No, I think you just need to make the differentiation between the iCloud file structure and your local file system. And, you know, when you open one of these new file dialog boxes, you have the option to go to iCloud or to your local file system. I mean, I'd be perfectly happy, to be honest, for everything except for my video files, which are huge files, for everything to be in iCloud, because, you know, I access them on my laptop, I access them on my desktop, I access them on my iPad. So iCloud's brilliant. And don't forget, you can search all your iCloud documents, although they are sort of in small silos on an application by application basis. You can still use Spotlight to search across all your iCloud documents. Mm. Now, Spotlight's not fantastic, and you know, I'm sure there are ways that they could actually.
There's going to be an API for that, though, surely.
Make Spotlight better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there are keywords you can use on Spotlight, and there are some third-party apps that expose Spotlight to be easier to use. But you can still get to your documents by searching for them. So I am a bit worried once we've got hundreds and thousands of files in iCloud, how it's going to handle the scalability. But for me, it's a perfect solution for normal files, not sort of specialized files. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the less I have on my local drive, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
I guess I could summarize my concern in just one sentence. I'm seeing with Mountain Lion, I'm seeing Apple doing a lot of work to make things simpler. I don't see them doing a lot of work to make the experience more powerful. You know, I'm seeing a lot of things that say, wow, that's a much easier way to do a to-do list. It doesn't necessarily integrate with everything that I want to do. It really is for just going into this app, making a to-do, checking things off that to-do list and making sure it's synced to other apps. There really isn't, for instance, the sharing sheet, which is a great idea, but it's still I can take a link and I can put this link on Twitter. I can take this file and I can airdrop it to another person. I can take this picture and put it on Flickr. Why can't it be extensible by developers so that I can simply say that anything that I see on my screen, I can send to Instapaper? Or I could simply create a pipeline that says that I'm collecting research for this document that I'm working on, or this other piece of research I'm doing. I just want to be able to take whatever selected text or selected picture I've got on the screen, click the sharing button, and simply send it into that document so that I don't even have to do a cut and paste. I don't have to keep switching between apps, just that. That's the difference. It's simple, but it's not powerful.
I mean, there's a point in the chat room here from Robert. He's saying, thus far, I've been happy that I haven't had to jailbreak OS X. and there is a certain point in that when you start to constrain and restrict, that's when people start saying, no, that's not what I want. This is what I need it to do. And that's when the jailbreaking then starts. And I think that's a hammer blow statement, because if someone's seriously thinking about now that their OS has to be jailbroken, and it's not iOS where it's constricted on a device that's very limited in functionality that does what it wants to do from place to place to place, but now it is something that's the desktop, which has always been the privy council of invention and creativity. That's kind of sad.
I see it as similar to the debate over Final Cut writ large, which is you had a very powerful piece of software that people loved. How it worked, Apple tried to make it more user-friendly, more broadly appealing, and really, really angered the people who had been using Final Cut up till now. And it's interesting to watch them sort of slowly add a few things back to try to keep that pro audience, but stay committed to, well, this is what we're doing now. And I think you could take a tip to where they're going with OS X there, which is, well, we don't want to just abandon the power user, but really, we're focused on the average user now.
I think that their reaction, I hope that other people aren't going to simply be dismissing reactions as, oh, well, people are set in their ways. I don't like new stuff. They can't be getting in the way of innovation. Oftentimes, this is, you have a tool that you use because it's the best tool for your job. It makes the job so much quicker and so much easier. But then if you totally redefine that tool so that it no longer works for the job you want to do, you really, really screwed that person up, because now not only do they have to sort of figure out how to make this new, there's a claw hammer that instead of having a handle, now it's just a big soft rubber ball that you can't really grip properly and kick any torque on. You have to either figure out how to make this tool work with your workflow, or now you have to go out and look for another tool and get trained up on that one instead. So when you do things like that, you really have to make a clear statement that here is why we're changing this tool. Here's why we are. And we know that we're tripping you up, but we feel as though this would be better for everybody in the long run. You can't just simply say, we're just going to make every Windows scroll the opposite way that it's always done for the past 20 years. Why? Because we have an ideological reason about the metaphor of, no, but why did you do that? Anyway, we've got this new window bouncing procedure. No, go back to the scroll. Why did you just change the scrolling? You know, it's not that we're setting your ways. We just want to make sure there's a benefit to the changes that are being made.
Mm-hmm. But don't forget to
oh, hello, mate.
Hello. I was just thinking, it's interesting that people picked up on Final Cut. And, you know, to be honest, I suspect a lot of Mac users actually don't really care what happens in Mountain Lion or Lion, or how, you know, the Finder works, or notifications or email, because I mean, a lot of people that are using their Macs, as Andy says, as a tool, that's, you know, once you fire it up in the morning and you've opened Photoshop or Final Cut Pro, that's where you are, and that's the environment that you live and you work in. And as long as you can save your document and the application doesn't crash, then you're good to go. I mean, it's a long time since I've lived and died in InDesign and Photoshop and stuff, but you spend all day every day in an app, and the interface and the workings of that app are designed and you know, it's Adobe that tells you how Photoshop
it's looks bad enough when you have to reload the application and go back to the default layout because you'd sat and tweaked it for the last 2 years. I've had that with Photoshop. God, Bennett. Yeah.
But the trouble, I think, a lot of the brouhaha about Final Cut is that not so much fiddling around with the peripherals, Apple were messing with people's day-to-day workflow.
Yeah, I imagine it's a little bit like having Apple's new version of the oven has 5 buttons for bake, fry, broil, and reheat. Well, but before you gave us a dial for the actual temperature, that's how I like to work, and that's a more finer tuned control. Yes, but this is simpler. No, but I can't do my job with five buttons. I don't want to redefine.
Mountain Lion isn't getting rid of the dial. Mountain Lion is putting the dial in a weird place that you have to use a screwdriver to get to, but it's still there.
Yes, I want to make sure that I'm not saying that I think that Mountain Lion is a step backward. I'm just saying that this was after I got to the end of looking through everything, and after I got to the end of my briefing and I digested all of that, I did see a consistent picture of, I can't think of one thing that made the OS more powerful. I can't think of any iOS feature that they decided to reconceptualize it for the desktop. They decided to, just like when they decided to build apps for the iPad, they didn't say we're going to take the Mac version of Mail and simply put it right on the iPad, because the iPad is a different sort of device. Touchscreen is a different sort of interface than a mouse and a keyboard. Also, the way that people handle an iPad is going to be different from the way that they interact with even a laptop computer. So we need to recontextualize this for this new sort of device. I'm not seeing that same sort of thing when they're taking these mobile apps and turning them into the Mac OS. So all I'm saying is that that's why when I edited my version of the document, I want to make sure that my concerns were about Mac OS 11 in two or three years time, and not about what's coming up later this year. I hope that's not the. I hope if it's a new direction, that it's not that my gross Christmas future scenario is not going to play out.
I think my mother's a good example of the change in, thanks mate, I mean, she's 80 years old.
She's a lovely, lovely woman. I'm sure she's a lovely person.
No, she threw my clothes out once at the bedroom window, and I had to climb out on the flat roof and get them, mate. Don't even start down that one. That's deep scar right there.
Wow.
But she's a good example, because I had her on a Windows machine. She wanted to buy a Windows machine. She went down to PC World by herself, bought the damn thing, brought it back, and I'm like, holy hell, what have you done, Ma? And it took me 2 years to talk her out of this machine, because it was like, it just did it. No, it can't just do it, Mum. You did it. To the point that I then got her onto an iMac, and now I've got her on an iMac. It's great. A bit of tech support. I can do it from here. I can go up via back to my Mac and sort it all out. And then as soon as Lion came out, I just looked and said, you know, the change from Windows to Mac was big enough and bad enough. There's no way I'm going to change it from Snow Leopard to Lion. And now she's just got even further away. And if you're talking about the dumbing down of the OS, I think that's actually possibly one of the worst problems, is that they're not actually dumbing it down, because they're making wholesale changes in interaction. The leap from Snow Leopard interaction to mission control, loss of expose spaces, all of those kind of things up to Lion, and now the move from that to Mountain Lion, those are almost not a million miles away from the change that she made from Windows Vista to OS 10.
Yeah, but don't forget, one of the main things I think they're doing with Mountain Lion is the unification of OS 10 and iOS. They're making it easier for people who buy iPads, who buy iPhones, and then decide they want a home computer, to actually go ahead, buy a Mac. And, you know, you've actually got all the same widgets and the same general layout of stuff and the same functionality. You've got the integration with iCloud on your iOS device than you have on your OS 10 device, you know, on your laptop or on your desktop Mac. So I think that's one of the major pushes within Apple to actually do this unification, to make it more of a seamless transition, or to enable your iOS and OS 10 devices to for you to work with them in a similar fashion. You know, because that just will. I mean, I think they've already been talking about the halo effect that the iPad and the iPhone has for bringing people across to the Mac, because we're seeing, you know, these fantastic sales figures for the Mac. And this is yet another way of them, you know, sort of making sure that carries on growing, really, to make it easier for iOS people to transition across. Not necessarily to transition across, because people won't transition from the iPad to the Mac. They will have an iPad and a Mac if they want to have a home computer for the next 2 or 3 years anyway, until goodness knows what happens at that point.
I think following on that point, it's good to consider, too, you know, Apple sold 5 million Macs last quarter, but they sold like 15 million iPads and 30 bajillion iPhones. And so if you're looking at, try to think of it from Apple's perspective, is looking at, okay, here's the people who use the Mac now, and here's the people who are going to use the Mac, or we hope will use, you know, we hope we'll get a Mac. That market is way, way bigger than the people already using it. I mean, that's just... That's something we can't get around.
That hurts.
That's something that us that have been using this, you know, using the Mac for years and years, you know, we have to understand that's the reality.
That is two criminals getting to the wall when they're about to be caught by the police. The first one jumps over the wall, turns around to his mate and goes, nah, stuff it, and walks away. Sorry, Andy, you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was going to say, well, realize you're comparing that to a comparing $1,000 to $2,000 desktop computer to devices that range from $199 to, you know, the basic iPad costs $500. Also, people are buying those things alongside whatever their desktop is. I think that Apple would be foolish if they didn't learn from the experience of selling so many iPads to so many people. But you would think, not being an executive at Apple, you would think that would allow them to a lot of freedom to cater to two really very different types of consumers. They could simply say, if you're for power users, for people who really are going to sit behind this machine for 8 hours a day and get stuff done with a really, really intense focused agenda, we have the Mac OS line. We have and at the bottom of the line is a nice $1,000 laptop that will do everything you could ever want a computer to do, but not everybody's like that. And for that, we have the iOS line, in which case you're giving up the top 20% of a computer's features, but we are making the simplest, most revolutionary operating system ever. It's ultra portable, it's ultra cheap, it's ultra reliable. And if anything, there's been a move that I've been following in the App Store for the past 6 months, where you're seeing more and more apps that aren't mobile versions of desktop apps. Like, even when you get a really good, like the iPad version of iMovie, for instance, it's clearly a mobile version of a desktop video editor. But now you're seeing more apps like Avid's new video editor, which, if the iPad is your only computer that you own on this planet, it's a kick butt video editor. You don't even necessarily need to ever dump this footage, dump this project back to a desktop to finish it up or do the real work. You could really do an entire project in this and not even care about it. And that's only one of several apps that are like that, where they're not built with the idea of this is going to be a mobile expression or an iOS expression of a desktop concept. We're seeing developers who are really thinking of the iPad as a true post-PC device, as the only computer that people could have. So I really think that's such a natural segregation between two types of users: the people who just want things to be as simple and clear as possible, and the people who never. If you're going to take $1,500 from me, you had better not put any limitations on what I want to do, because I've got another company that's willing to sell me the exact same computer for $500 less that doesn't have these same limitations, and also has all kinds of free spyware and malware.
You could have a home version. You could have a home premium version. You could have a professional version and a business version.
Well, you know, what? I think you need to make sure that there's sort of an annual service contract, because that way that you'll be attending to the needs of these basic users. And if there's some way that you could actually have another service that could keep it safe so that you don't have to mess with that yourself.
Great thinking.
If anybody has like access to foreign investment money, we were looking for angel fundings. We can have a business plan done by 4 o'clock, I think. I think we're good. We'll be ready to face the dragons like in no time.
Good one. This podcast and lots of others isn't possible without the very kind support of UK2.net. They've supported us now for 3 years almost, and we are utterly lost without them. They pick up all the bandwidth. They're going to be upset this week, I think, for sure. Please support UK2 if you can. If you're looking for anything that's web-based, domain names, VPS servers, they've got some fantastic deals on the dedicated servers. Really, really good deals. And also, they've got a fantastic site builder application. You can have a website up and running in under a minute if you need it. It doesn't do much, obviously, but you know, what can you do in a minute? And it's got full Facebook integration as well with all of their sites, through to your fan page or to your home page. Please go to bageltechnews.com, click on the link, and when you go and buy your stuff from UK2, put in the offer code BAGELTECH, you get 15% off. and put in the offer code BAGELDNS, and if you're transferring a DNS domain name service in, then you won't pay the DNS management charge on that at all. So please support MUK2.net. We are indebted to them for our current and our past and our future as well, I hope. And also, we're trying to expand ourselves into Samsung IPTV and a few other IPTV channels like Roku and so on. We've got some people writing some apps for us at the moment, very kindly. Thank you very much to them. Chris Kempton's one that's really putting a lot of work in for us. If you would be able to support us, then it'd be great. There's a subscription button on the homepage. Go and have a click on it, and you can do $5, $10, or $20 a month. Carl came up with a great idea. You know, this is kind of like buying the network a beer each month. So for $5, it's £3.20. You can buy me a beer. Would you buy me a beer once a month if you saw me standing in a pub? All I need is 1,000 of you to buy me that beer, and I'll be drunk. There we go. Except for so much.
Or a tub of hand sanitizer, anything, or mouthwash, anything with a high alcohol content. Really, it's not about the money, is the message.
Yeah, meths would do. That would do. Yeah. Methylated spirits. I could do that.
Well, lots of Sudafed. Lots of expired
Sudafed.
Oh, what's that mix there, Tom?
Just a little aftershave and cheesecloth, you know?
What's the cheesecloth do?
It sifts out all of the bad stuff, so you can just drink the alcohol.
Good man. I'll try that later. Thank you.
We'll do that for the Bagel Tech Christmas party.
Yes.
Makes for a fantastic afternoon.
Yeah, don't forget as well, Bagel Tech Bash, 6th of July, my place. We're going to have a whole pig roasting, so that's going to be fun. Get yourself a flight booked already and get your day off work and get a hotel and come over and get drunk. It'll be fun. I've also got a studio day as well. I've booked a big studio that's in a town near where I live called Tamworth. Real rig, nice big place. And Alex Fox is going to be there as well, another photographer, and he's going to do a static lighting tutorial, and I'm going to do a flashlight tutorial, except I'm going to be watching his static light tutorial, so you'll have to work for yourself. 6th of July and 7th of July, please come along. Don, have you got a cool thing for us?
I'm not, with being away for 3 weeks, I don't know if we've already covered some of these, but I'll
I hope you haven't picked Glimpse.
Pardon?
I hope you haven't picked Glimpse.
No. How about Gemini?
Go on.
All right, Gemini. It's a really nice app. It's in the App Store. It's a duplicate finder. So basically, you just drag folders onto the application, and it analyzes and discovers all the duplicates within the folder structure, and then gives you the option of deleting them. But it's a really nice application. They've put it together. It's a beautiful thing to look at, and they've done a really nice job on it. It's not cheap. It's £6.99. Come on, it's for a Mac, and it's a great utility. But it's by MacPaw. It's called Gemini, the duplicate finder.
That's good. There's a lot of, I mean, especially with photography, there's an awful lot of duplicates that that kick around all over the place because your IMG file structure restarts itself, etc. It's good to find those. And then does it let you compare whether they are different or similar?
Yes, it does. It doesn't just delete them. It gives you a nice list, and you can go through and it works a treat. It's got 38 five stars in the App Store as well, so it's not just me who likes it.
No, that's got a 5-star review off me already, and I haven't used it yet. Good choice, mate. Andy, have you got a cool thing for us?
Kind of a quick one. I'm sort of in the middle of trying to get a hold of and test out every single iPad keyboard solution that's out there. And I've been pleased to find that a lot of companies have been busy improving products I didn't like last year. This is the Zag Folio from Zag. I didn't like it last year because, like so many manufacturers, it had such a really terrible, like, chiclet rubber keyboard. They seem to have gotten grasp of the idea that the most important thing is to make sure that put all your money into the key switches, and that if you make if you buy scissor types key switches that are exactly the same as what you'd find on a good notebook, it doesn't even matter, or it matters a lot less that the keyboard itself is actually maybe about 80% the size and width of a standard keyboard. So I can actually type pretty comfortably with this model, and I wouldn't necessarily say that it is the greatest iPad keyboard solution out there, because I really think it depends on what you want to use it for. But in terms of something that will always be a nice compact little folio like this,
that looks great. It's
certainly my favorite solution. That column will probably be published in another couple of weeks. I'm still waiting for the TouchFire keyboard overlay to arrive in my house. But this is definitely, like, if you want something simple like this that folds up into a folio, it's the Zag Folio that I like. It's $99, not cheap, but it's Bluetooth. it works great, and it's very, very comfortable to use.
That does look fantastic as well when you close it down.
Yeah, see, that's why I have, that's another thing I haven't liked about so many of these other things, where it's small, it's hard to type with, and it makes the thing look like a big frickin' like hockey puck.
Yeah.
Of technology. This looks like something that you could conceivably, it makes it as thick as a netbook, but not a particularly thick netbook. It's perfectly fine carrying around, that sort of thing.
Excellent. Good pick. Chris, what have you got for us?
We already talked about mine, but I highly recommend downloading the Messages beta if you're running Lion. Like I said, we talked about it. It has some flaws. It's not perfect, but it is really nice to be able to, from a central location, be able to get a hold of a lot of people a lot of different ways. And especially if you've got, you know, iPhone using friends, or they've got iPads or iPod touches. My girlfriend's mother, for instance, doesn't have an iPhone, but she does have an iPad. She doesn't like to talk on the phone. So it's really great to just send her an iMessage and then wait for her to reply. So,
well, the more you don't have to talk to your mother-in-law, I would say that's a winner.
She's actually quite nice, generally speaking.
Yeah, that's because you're not married yet, dude. Wait till you're married. It won't last. You'll be the Antichrist before you know it.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other message there is she's also a listener of the show.
Oh, well, there are exceptions to that rule, of course.
She doesn't listen to this show. Nothing personal.
No one listens to this show.
That's Jesus. Not true.
I'm listening to it right now.
What about Lord Bagel?
Me too.
Yeah, Lord Bagel. He throws abuse. He doesn't listen. Not it. Excellent pick. Thank you very much. Tom, do you have your pick for us is not going to be your hard drive, I take it?
No, actually, it finally died in the middle of the show while Andy was waxing poetic about startup pitches. It wouldn't even erase.
Is it an SSD?
No, it's a good old fashioned 750 gig magnetic hard drive. So my cool thing is my screwdriver that I'm using to take off the back and replace the hard drive. It's a General Precision Plus 751011. Comes with all of these different ends for it, and it's perfect.
And is it dirt cheap at the local Target or something like that?
It was $5 or something.
Those are good. I've got a little tiny tool set that I got for £5, and it's got Torx stuff. It's got tons of fittings for it. It's beautiful. Really love it.
My dad, who is still one of the smartest people I ever knew, gave me this advice saying, if you've got $100 to spend on tools for screwdrivers and things like that, buy like 5 sets of the $20 set, not the $100 set, and just keep one set in every room you live in.
Yeah.
That's the only way to make sure you will never lose the exact screwdriver you need. So
exactly right.
There's a set of tools everywhere you go.
Great pick, Tom. DHM, what you got for us, mate?
Well, many, many years ago, when OS 9 was still around and using a Mac was fun and you could do everything you wanted to do on it. we used to stay behind after work to shoot the khaki out of each other on really blocky pixelated video games. And now in 2012, you can download Doom from the App Store and you can have it all back again, but in kind of medium 2005 style resolution. But it's only $6.99, and it's really good fun.
You're having a laugh. £6.99 for Doom.
Yeah, it's a free code too.
I know, but
they open sourced the code, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, my screwdriver didn't cost me that much.
No, someone got screwed here, mate, but it wasn't you.
Well, you've been able to get it for free for a while, and
You thought you'd wait till they started charging for it.
No, the one they charge for is the graphics are better and it's got better support and stuff. The one that's completely free you can just download is okay. But
can you qualify the graphics are better? Because I remember the graphics and better would be you know, like
64 pixels wide instead of 32 pixels.
Exactly.
Wide. Yeah, we're not talking Super Mario here. It is a little bit, you know, it's kind of Sonic the Hedgehog, at least.
But that's fine. I actually just the other day I downloaded Galaga. Which is actually a free download. Like for extra money, for free, you get the classic arcade Galaga. For $2.99, you get like an updated version as an in-app purchase. And just the idea of man, I'm back in that bowling alley in Walpole, Massachusetts in 1987.
Well, one of the contributors to the Big Show, a guy called Carrie Holtzman, who used to do the Computer America show, he's got Gallagher, he's got the original box, the thing from the bowling alley in his office, and he had a guy come in and he's put all the stuff in it to run like five or six different games, you know, Donkey Kong, all that kind of thing. And you'd love that as well.
Mm. You see, it's not about the number of polygons on the screen and all the stuff. It's about how much fun you have playing it.
What's in here? It's what's in here. Why can't I explain that to you? Arcade, not in here. Arcade, not in here.
I popped down $10 for that Atari app on iPad, which gives you every Atari game ever made.
And there were some great Atari games.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it's missing, though. It's missing the Activision games.
It has some of them, but yeah, you're right. I think there are a few titles I noticed weren't in there.
I mean,
he's got Doom, one game from 30 years ago in Braille for $6.99.
It's mostly ASCII.
And the other thing is my properly funny pick of the day, but not Mac based, has. Did I do Star Wars Uncut? Have I done that one?
No. What's that?
Well,
is this the video?
That's cool.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Star Wars Uncut is basically Star Wars Part One, the original one.
Yeah.
Basically, what they did is they went online and they divided the film up into 300 parts, and everyone went away and took a part of the film, like 20 seconds each, and made that part any way they wanted to make it. Stop motion. Animation, video, whatever, CGI, and then they put it all back together and they made the whole film start to finish out of these 20-second edits that people made themselves. So it flicks from one style to another. It's the whole film. And apparently George Lucas is happy with it, so classes for him.
Otherwise DMCA would be in use.
Yeah, but it's
George Lucas is also hilarious. Happy with episodes 1 through 3, so...
Yeah.
Welcome to the burn unit, George. Yeah.
And I think I hit his hand in the 3D release of The Phantom Menace as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucasfilm was really cool about that. For years and years and years, their policy is any fan who wants to create anything Star Wars related, so long as you don't charge money for it, they're cool with it. So there are these amazing fan films with incredible digital effects and community theater great acting, but great costumes. And it's just amazing that there are people who are willing to spend all this money and all this time and passion to just enhance and extend the Star Wars universe. And I'm glad that they haven't been shut down.
Good.
And on the other hand, in Star Wars Uncut, you have cats dressed up as Jawas. Yes.
you really have to check this out, because there will be, like, again, someone who just, like, decided to spend 8 seconds in their kitchen trash making a C-3PO mask out of tinfoil and, like, you know, fast food containers, say, I'm not going over that, it's far too rocky. And then the next clip will be an intense animation student who did professional grade, like 10 seconds of animation, of professional studio grade animation, and then he'll be back to, oh, look, here's R2-D2 meatball. Ah, I'm going off this way. Oh, no.
I love the text adventure bit.
Say again, Tom.
What you guys are missing, here in Chicago, there's a small community theater called Guerrilla Theater here, and a lot of, like... there's a lot of theater here. So, like, people, students and people directing the first play and stuff like that, they do these plays there. But they had this thing, it started about a year and a half ago. And now they do these, like, nerd burlesque shows.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you said nerd.
Yeah. They have, so they do all kinds of, they're working on an Indiana Jones one now, and they have a Lord of the Rings one, and they have a new Star Trek one. I saw the Star Wars one. I think it started actually with a Super Mario Brothers one. It's called Boobs and Goombas. Yeah, but they have one at Star Wars, and it's so well done. Like, you go in thinking, like, okay, how good can this possibly be? But they really understand, like, the culture. They really understand, like, the fan, a Star Wars fan. And so there's all these, like, it's just all these inside jokes throughout, and, like, you know, they and all the characters are played by women too, so it, like, it, there's all kinds of extra innuendo they put in there, and the costumes are really funny and really well done. It's, you'd really be surprised. I mean, Star Wars fans can really take it pretty far.
I don't know if it's the same group, but there's a group that's been doing Comic-Con burlesque at the San Diego Comic-Con every single year. And I've never attended, but I've seen some of the pictures from it. And it's like, okay, Princess Leia in the sand barge slave costume. I totally get that. Good. You know, and then you get, a hot version of C-3PO. I'm not sure if I'm on board with that. Chewbacca! Close window.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, they pulled it off. I mean, Darth Vader, R2-D2 even. I mean,
believe they pulled it off.
They pulled it off.
That's extra 20, but anyway, well worth it. I'll be quiet now. I'm sorry.
This Russ in the chat room says, why does this show always turn dirty at the end?
It's the after 11 show. It's the lounge show.
Well, for the English, it's fine because the alcohol's kicking in. But
right.
If it's you guys, Merritt, there's no coffee in that cup, is there? It's just pure vodka.
It takes me some effort. It's only 11 a.m. here.
Oh, you could start. No, 11's cool. As soon as you put down the cornflake bowl, dude. That's fair game.
Just don't, the Hunter S. Thompson way.
If you drink before breakfast, you got a problem.
Ether. some beer.
My pick. Champions. Not that anyone's bothered, but pick is an oldie but goodie. App Zapper. Absolutely fantastic. It's $12, and I don't think we've picked it before. But if we have, I don't care.
$12.
Yeah, all $12.
$12 for 12? Are you kidding me?
It does more than Doom.
Who in this world has $12, I ask you?
And it zaps apps, you know, and it does it bloody well as well. I've had a few things like CCleaner and...
You can trash files for free. What are you spending $12 for?
No, you can trash things, mate, but then there's always some little bit of crap just left somewhere that stops something working. And yeah, you'll know about it. This thing does a good job, cleans an awful lot of stuff out. I don't know why it does it, but when you try and get rid of an Apple application, it says, oh no, are you sure? Because it is Apple's application.
You can switch that off.
No, you can switch it off, which is good news. But
I've got to run.
Yeah, all right, mate. No worries. But if you can, if you want to use it, that's great. $12. You get 5 free ones though, anyway. So even if you just want to download it and try it, five uni version, universal goes, and that's it. Away you go. There you go. App Zapper, $12. Just Google App Zapper. I can't remember the name of the website. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. McAllister?
You can find me over at screencastonline.com or at my blog at themacscreencastguy.com or on Twitter as Don McAllister.
Is the offer code for Bagel Tech listeners back up and running yet?
I still haven't sorted that out. I'll sort that out for next week.
People can send you an email.
Yeah.
Write and complain. Write to their MP. The number of complaints I've had this week. Gordon Bennett.
Not about me, I hope.
No, people have said, now you've started asking for donations on the show, I've stopped listening. I'll tell you what, I don't get anything from you. There's no sponsors. Sod off. See if I care. Andy, where can we get you, pal?
Anotko.com. If you can spell my last name, has my blog, links to all the other stuff I do. I'm also Anotko on Twitter. Got a Flickr stream, or if you can't spell my last name, go CWOB.com.
Cheers, mate. Thank you ever so much. Chris Forsman's available at Ars Technica. Of course, you can look at some of the great writing that he does on there for photography and for Mac. And you can get him at ForsMac on Twitter if you want to. Tom, long day ahead for you, mate, rebuilding.
Yeah, it's really not a time for plugging for me. I just want a moment of silence for my...
Oh, there it is. There it is.
My hard drive.
It's a Toshiba.
Your data has gone to a far, far better place. It's gone to Dropbox.
It's on my time machine. My time capsule.
That's good.
For my data.
That's good news, mate. I'm so sorry about that. Thank you ever so much, though, for making the effort to try and come. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. It was fun.
Good, man. Where can we get you, mate?
Oh, TomMerritt.com.
And on the Twit Network, delivering the fantastic daily show there.
Tech News Today, every day at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm not sure what it is at UTC. It's somewhere around 10:30 or 11:30, depending on what part of daylight savings time we're in.
We can barely fill an hour sometimes with a week's worth of news. So the fact that you managed to do it every day is pretty impressive.
We are so full of hot air, you wouldn't believe it.
Thanks so much. Dr. Happy Mate, where can we get you?
Well, slightly less globally, in Cirencester Cornhole Market every Wednesday.
Selling Macs.
Dodgy
Macs.
Advice, being grumpy.
Good man. Dr. Grumpy Mac. Or ran that lady's place.
Oh, yes, around the ladies' place.
Boom, yeah. Chicka, wow, wow.
Hey, talking to that, I'm late.
Oh, you are? Oh. You might be pregnant, you mean?
No, I'm just rotund.
Oh, right. No, you said you're late. I mean, as in like your period,
podcast
no?
Podcast don't preach. Please, podcast don't preach.
And at Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter.
Yeah, best left alone. Thanks very much, mate. We'll see you again next week with the Mac Show as normal every Friday. And we've got a big show on Thursday night. We've got photo show at 2 o'clock on the Friday and then Mac Show at 3:30. And don't forget the nonsense show tomorrow night looking at the underbelly of the net. That'll be Chris and Joe and Brian pulling it to pieces. Join them at 9:30. Thanks very much for listening. See you next week.